Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. This is Friday, the Friday show. It is Thursday night. And Philbert Applebag is joining me with our fabulous financial Philbert Fun Friday. How you doing,
hey,
Philbert?
Hey, hey. Glad to be here.
Hey. Sound like Big Albert. You know Big Albert? Fat Albert.
Yeah.
Hey.
So we Fat Philbert.
I don't know about that. But
I'm not that overweight. I'm really not overweight at all.
Just big boned.
Yeah. It's all muscle.
It's all muscle. Okay. Well, I mean, you're a drummer. Actually, drummers are usually pretty mean, lean drumming machines, aren't they?
You get a workout. It is a workout, yeah.
Yeah, it's a workout. So, we were talking just now about the what I've been calling the caravan of inclusiveness, and it ties in with a lot of things. It even ties in with our financial show. So when we recorded last week, I don't think we mentioned this. I think it came to my attention after, or maybe it was early the next morning or late that night, and I think I was talking about it on Stormfront on Friday morning. So I didn't talk about it on the National Bugle Radio until Monday, and Mark Collette and I had a big conversation about it. But you had this, as everybody knows by now, there's an NGO called Pueblos Sin Fronteras. It's modeled after the French, the Jewish French NGO Doctors Without Borders, or Médecins Sans Frontières. And apparently this organization's been around for 10 or 15 years, and they help immigrants in the United States and migrants get to the United States. So there you go. I haven't traced the money behind it, but it's probably the usual suspects. And their recent communiques where they're talking, you know, they and apparently having a caravan or group of people try to get to the United States is an annual event with them. But this year, it took on a special prominence, perhaps partly due to the size, perhaps because they tried to make it into more of a media event than usual. It was supposed to be a media event. They had a lot of media down there. Maybe it was a test of President Trump. But it started getting attention about a week ago. I think it was on BuzzFeed, some other non-mainstream or marginal web outlets, and then it's got into the alt-right outlets by Friday, and it started taking off, and got to Tucker Carlson and the mainstream Fox by Monday, probably over the weekend too, probably the weekend shows were talking about it and covering it. And so you had a big response and a big letter, I would say letter writing campaign, email campaign. The White House phone line, comment line was shut down because of Easter until Tuesday, but then they were flooded. And the president responded, and he responded very favorably. And, you know, he started tweeting that he was going to send troops to the border. He was taking troops out of Syria and send troops to the border. Wow, that would be actually honoring a campaign promise if he was a...
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that would be something. And, you know, the response from our people was, okay, well, those are good words. Let's see the deeds. Well, now we're seeing the deeds. And the troops are already being ordered to the border. They're being deployed immediately. And so you have the on the talking head shows, on the PBS shows, they're inviting people on saying how unnecessary it is. And it's a waste of money because we've already got such great structures at the border. We've got, you know, personnel, we've got technology, and we really don't need this. So it's just a ridiculous waste of money and resources. Of course, they had been all out, you know, all wanting to stop it. And earlier in the week, it was, oh, this would be unconstitutional, this would be illegal, you can't deploy troops within the United States. But of course, actually, President Obama did the same thing, President Bush did the same thing, President Eisenhower, you know, you can just go back and... so it's happening. It's happening. And even tying it into the finance, President Trump has been intimating that he is going to tie cooperation on immigration to NAFTA, that if the Mexicans aren't going to cooperate on this type of thing, because really the Mexican government was apparently cooperating with this NGO in sending the these Hondurans to the border, you know, helping them with preparing for asylum applications and whatnot, that the United States would just forget about NAFTA, because NAFTA is being renegotiated. And so, yeah, this ties in with all sorts of things. What are your thoughts, Philbert?
I was actually just looking at the bond market chart. Sorry to take a left turn there.
Go right ahead.
But this is Friday, like you said, and I'm not qualified to give financial advice whatsoever. I just tell people how I see it. And it looks like the bond market is starting to sell off. I've been watching this. And every time it starts to sell off, somebody... or a group of people, whoever it may be, seems to prop it back up. And the only people powerful enough to do this would be either investment banks or central banks. So, mm-hmm. Like you said, the usual suspects.
The usual suspects.
Now, but I was just looking at the bond market chart.
And the benchmark, it's a benchmark rate, the 10-year rate. I mean, is that considered the benchmark? And that's the one I should be paying most attention to. I usually pay most attention to the 30-year rate, because when it flashes up on the nightly business report, that's the one at the bottom of the screen. And so that's the one I actually follow more. Not a good reason.
Okay.
Not a good reason for it, but just that's the way my eyes work.
And yeah, you got an eye on the ticker.
Yeah, and I noticed that while the yield on the 30-year bond had been pretty consistently above 3% in recent weeks, it dipped below 3%, and now it's back up again, above 3%. And of course, when the yield goes down, it means the price is going up.
2.74. I know it went up so much in one day. There was so much bond propping up that... the yield went down. The yield had to go down. That's crazy. I mean, that's a monumental scale of bond buying. And, you know, the only way that can happen is if, you know, central banks or investment banks are doing it, like I said.
Yeah, and I don't have an ear to the market the way I did, 10, 20, 30 years ago. Well, 30 years ago, I probably didn't have an ear to it either. But,
I don't think anybody knows everything about it, and I'm just kind of starting to almost get a mental picture of, like, money in and out, and it's very confusing. And yeah, I'm no genius by any means,
but I mean,
trying to follow it how I see it.
Yeah, monetary policy is, I mean, the essence of it is central banks buying and selling various instruments to, institutional investors. This is the essence of it. And that can include, you know, these bonds. It can include short-term money. It can, you know, notes and what have you. Of course,
monetary policy is primarily, it's like the adjustment of interest rates.
And the vehicle for adjusting there's certain policy rates that can just be set by fiat, but
controlling inflation as well.
Yeah, but the market rates. So there are rates that are set by fiat, but there are market rates that are not so much set, but the central banks will buy or sell bonds or whatever, you know, instruments of one particular maturity or another and influence the rates up or down according to how they see fit. So, for instance, with the quantitative easing, they wind up flooding the market with massive amounts of liquidity, and interest rates fall because there's so much money around, and the interest rates are the cost of money.
And I believe the ECB just came out and said they were halting their quantitative easing.
Now, let's move on a little bit to Facebook. Facebook has been much in the news. There's been a lot of stock volatility. And Facebook has been a massive loser. So the share price is, it must have been over $200 a share for a while recently, and it's gone down to, you know, it's down below 150, I believe. I don't have the rates right in front of me, but this massive decline in Facebook in particular, which kind of dragged down the rest of the tech stocks and the rest of the market along with it. And this has been brought on by this so-called data breach, where they sell user information to companies, to advertisers, or to, in this case, to an electioneering firm, a political firm. Nothing new about it. You know, they were selling or even giving it information away to the Obama people back in 2012. This one organization that is at the center of the news now is Cambridge Analytica, which first came to my attention because, you know, they do research. And when I was researching the American-backed Ukrainian government imposed by Victoria Nuland, I remember I was trying to ascertain the ancestry of Poroshenko. And
Poroshenko.
According to Cambridge Analytica, he was Jewish. I don't know, you know, all of the scope of what they do, but they had done a study, and that was the source of the assertion that he was Jewish. He's probably only part Jewish, and I don't know how much he is accepted as a Jew, but that was the source of that information. And then Yatsenyuk, he was described as Jewish by the Jerusalem Post or Haaretz. Articles there had written about him as a Jew.
I know, he was a Freemason.
Yeah, he may well be.
I don't know if he was Jewish or not.
You're talking about Yatsenyuk?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when he was in the cabinet before the coup, he had been in the cabinet for a while before the coup. I think he might have even been prime minister for a while before the coup, or deputy prime minister. And there had been reports he was Jewish, and then there were more reports. And these were reports coming from Jewish sources. I think he had tried to deny it. I can't remember the name of the current prime minister, but the name of the current prime minister is openly Jewish, the current prime minister of Ukraine. But anyway, getting back to Cambridge Analytica, they had been doing some campaign work for Donald Trump, and they had acquired this information, and they were supposed to destroy it, but maybe they didn't destroy it after they used it. You know, it's only a scandal because it has to do with Donald Trump. I mean, this is the type of thing that Facebook has been doing all along, and it's never been a scandal. It's only a scandal now because the media is in this tizzy about the whole Russia hoax. And so it was funny tonight watching the PBS NewsHour and Judy Woodruff, who is this, like, kind of zombie-esque. She was a reporter back in the 70s, and I guess she was attractive in the 70s, but now she's just a withered old skeleton with the most grotesque neck. And she's
Skeletor.
Kind of, you know, I don't really want to talk about people's appearance and old people. I have a lot of friends who are very old, And I don't want to get on people about their age and appearance, but, you know, she's just kind of like this crooked old lady. She's probably got severe scoliosis, and she's just not the right material to be an anchor. She's the face of a network, but oh, it's PBS.
Not too easy on the eyes.
Not too easy on the eyes, and they're good at that. I mean, they're reporters. They got this Lisa Desjardins, who is actually, I think, probably a pretty good reporter in terms of working hard and getting information. You know, her slant is typical PBS. I don't like it, but she is really pretty homely. But you know, I shouldn't be shallow in talking about their appearance. But it was funny with Judy Woodruff, and of course PBS has been almost as bad as CNN in this whole Russia hoax business. And so she's interviewing the I guess the number two person at Facebook, which is you know, this woman, Jewish woman, Sheryl Sandface. Sandberg, but let's be consistent, Sheryl Sandface, and asking, you know, mostly a bunch of softball questions, and Sheryl Sandface has these well-prepared answers, and yes, well, we were all about building social experiences for people, and we didn't think hard enough about the possible misuse of data, and that's on us. This bull honk, you know, I have a friend who's been on the show before, Professor Richard Sloan, and he said, yeah, the business model of Facebook is making it fun to spy on yourself, right? Making spying on yourself fun. But the main question, the real question was when what's her name, Judy Woodruff, she asked, you know, how do you feel with the knowledge that you might have helped throw the election to Donald Trump by, you know, supplying information to this Cambridge Analytica that then, you know, used it for Russian trolls or some ridiculous thing like that. And so here's the whole thing, you know, Facebook, on the one hand, they want to downplay the significance of this, but the whole significance, the whole reason it's got media significance is because it might have thrown the election, according to this stupid hoaxing narrative, it threw the election to Donald Trump, and so, you know, they've got to be contrite on the one hand, contrite and say, oh, we'll do better, but on the other hand, they don't want to take the fall. They don't want to take the blame for having thrown the election to Trump, which of course they didn't. People voted for Trump, but you know, they're part of the cause. They're down with the cause of you know, Putin elected Trump. That Russia stole the election for Trump. So the whole thing is ridiculous, but it is fun seeing Facebook being under attack. I'm sure they'll survive, but I'd really like them to suffer some long-term damage. Well, we're about to come up on the break. Does Filbert Applebag have a Facebook page?
No. No, I do not.
No. I have a Facebook page. At one point, I thought I would use it for something. I'd integrate it into nationalbugle.com, and I did for a little while, but I stopped. Okay, well, we will be back after the break with more of National Bugle Radio.
All right.
Thank you. know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the show. This is the time every week where we do our ZioWatts News Roundup. Our first story today: Israeli PM backtracks on migrant deal with the UN. Prime Minister Netanyahu canceled a deal with the UN that would have prevented Israel from deporting thousands of African migrants a day after having previously announced the agreement. There are currently some 42,000 African migrants in Israel, and more than 1,400 asylum seekers are held in two detention centers, including the notorious Holat facility in the Negev Desert. Prior to the deal with the UN, Israel had handed notices to nearly 39,000 asylum seekers, mainly Eritreans and Sudanese, notifying them that they would be deported to Uganda and Rwanda. Now, the next related story: the UN Refugee Agency urges Israel to reconsider its decision canceling this migrant deal. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees has called on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to reconsider his decision to renege on an agreement on resettling thousands of African asylum seekers. The UNHCR continues to believe that a win-win agreement that would benefit both Israel and the people needing asylum is in everybody's best interest, the UN Refugee Agency said after a statement on Tuesday, encouraging the Israeli regime to consider the matter further while standing ready to be of help. Netanyahu said in a televised address on Monday that Israel and the UNHCR had reached an agreement for the departure of at least 16,250 migrants to Western nations. However, a few hours later, he put the deal on hold until further notice, and earlier on Tuesday changed course in a dramatic move that he said, and said that he had canceled the agreement altogether, after facing pressure from his right-wing base. The following day, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency reports that the Israeli government told the country's Supreme Court that it is highly probable that a third country will accept African asylum seekers deported by Israel. The third country is widely reported to be Uganda, although that country denies it. The state is asking the court to allow the detention of 212 Sudanese and Eritrean migrants currently being held in a detention facility in southern Israel until a final departure deal is reached. Human rights organizations are demanding their release. Next story. Netanyahu, Trump clash over early Syria withdrawal plan. A recent telephone conversation between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump grew tense over Trump's earlier expression of his tendency to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria very soon, according to two U.S. officials. Netanyahu and Trump discussed regional developments over the phone on Wednesday, according to the official account from the United States. But two unidentified U.S. officials later said that Netanyahu had objected to Trump's remark that he would like U.S. forces out of Syria shortly, according to the Times of Israel. There were no more details on the give and take between the Israeli Prime Minister and the U.S. President. On March 29th, Trump said the U.S. would be coming out of Syria, like, very soon. Let the other people take care of it now. The U.S. reportedly has more than 2,000 troops stationed in eastern Syria, in addition to several thousand others in the Arab countries north. Meanwhile, U.S. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats says Washington has made its decision on the status of U.S. troops in Syria after calls by President Donald Trump for the removal of American forces from the Muslim country. I cannot go into details of what was decided on yesterday with our national security team and with the president, but there will be released a statement shortly relative to the decision that was made on that topic, Coates told reporters at a gathering of defense writers group in Washington Wednesday morning. The military mission to eradicate ISIS in Syria is coming to a rapid end, and with ISIS being almost completely destroyed, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said in the statement, the U.S. and our partners remain committed to eliminating the small ISIS presence in Syria that our forces have not already eradicated. We will continue to consult with our allies and friends regarding future plans. We expect countries in the region and beyond, plus the United Nations, to work towards peace and ensure that ISIS never reemerges. Next story. U.S. conditions support for Solomon's kingship to Israel normalization. A dissident Saudi prince has revealed a series of conditions set by the U.S. and Israel for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to secure their help in ascending to the throne at home. Among them, the normalization of Riyadh's ties with the regime in Tel Aviv. Khalid bin Farhan al-Saud, who fled Saudi Arabia in 2007, made the remarks to the pan-Arab Al-Hawar television channel in Germany, where he has obtained political asylum. Besides normalizing ties with Israel, the kingdom would have to guarantee the security for Israeli vessels traveling through the Straits of Tehran between the Gulf of Aqaba and the Red Sea proper if Salman seeks to become a monarch, he added. Meanwhile, in an apparent reference to Iran, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman says the regimes in Saudi Arabia and in Israel have a common enemy and that they could be immediately normalized their relations once the Palestinian issue is resolved. That concludes this week's ZioWatch News Roundup.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Welcome back to the show. So just before the Zyowatts News Roundup, we were talking about Faceberg and Sheryl Sandface. And, you know, she was rumored to be Hillary's first choice as Secretary of Treasury. Isn't that amazing? And she would probably have had Victoria Nuland as Secretary of State. And there's this former, Assistant Secretary of Defense named Michelle Flournoy or something, who I think might be part Hungarian Jewish or something, but she was going to be the Secretary of Defense, according to a lot of speculation. And then that black lady, what's her name, at Attorney General? What was her name? I just said it during the break.
Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, Loretta Lynch. Yeah. I mean, that would have been an all-female lineup. I don't mind it. You know, there are women who are no worse than men in office. I thought Thatcher did a good job of proving that women can screw things up as much as men. And May, she certainly is showing how bad women can screw things up, and Merkel. So, well, anyway, though, the next order of business is the China trade war, the looming China trade war. And this has been, you know, the market volatility, a big part of the market volatility has revolved around whether or not there's going to be a trade war with China. So some months ago, as you recall, President Trump announced tariffs on Chinese solar panels and washing machines. You remember that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you had shares in Yingli Solar, that wasn't good.
Thank goodness I don't.
Yeah, thank goodness. But that didn't have too much of an impact. But then more recently, when he levied, and we talked about this a month ago or so on this show, the tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum, then the market sat up and paid attention, and that had a lot to do with the beginning of this period of volatility that we've been having. And, you know, there was some question, was China going to respond or not? Well, actually, China did respond, and so I guess there's going to be tariffs on American pork, and the Chinese like their pork, and there's a lot of Chinese. That was a big deal, pork and wine and some other things.
I believe China is half the world's pork consumption.
Well, you know, when I was there is a Chinese saying, when you get married, may you have many children and a herd of pigs. So it's important. They like their pork, sweet and sour pork. And so they responded, and now Trump, apparently, this is from half an hour ago on Bloomberg News, Trump escalates trade tensions with call for new China tariffs. Now, you've got Larry Kudlow, who we talked about a few weeks ago. He's the replacement for Gary Cohn. Of course, it's also Larry Kudlow. But Larry Kudlow has a relationship with Trump and was saying, well, you know, Trump's really a free trader, but we've got to talk about these things. We've got to talk about these things. It's good to have this conversation. So we'll see where it goes. And to what extent, Filbert, do you think that these type of trade actions, tariffs and whatnot, to what extent can jobs really be brought back to the United States?
I don't think that makes a difference. What really made the difference was in 2001 when China joined the World Trade Organization. Well, NAFTA, too, before that. But in 2001, in the early 2000s is when you really start to see lots and lots of not just large companies, like mid-sized companies, too. You know, not companies just like the size of GE and manufacturers. But, you know, after, that's what I think. In 2001 was what I saw when they joined the World Trade Organization.
Well, you know, China's been amazing. And I went to China in 1987. And it was, I remember bringing back a sweatshirt and a pocket knife. And what else? A few little trinkets, batteries and a flashlight. And I was like, wow, these are made in China. I mean, can you imagine made in China? Nobody's ever seen that before, made in China. No, you never saw made in China. You saw made in Hong Kong. You saw made in Taiwan, made in Japan. Those were things. Made in China in 1987 was not a thing. Then you got into the 1990s, and if you went to Toys R Us, you started seeing made in China, rubber duckies and things like that. It was, so they penetrated very low-tech plastic trinkets and whatnot made in China. And I remember, you know, I was covering Asian markets at the time, and you were getting, it started off on a pretty small scale. You were getting investment in areas in what they were calling special economic zones. So the first one was this area, Shenzhen, right outside of Hong Kong. And so Hong Kong-based companies would, and Hong Kong was, like, filled to the max. You know, it was very crowded, and and didn't have a lot of land, and at the time was not under Chinese control. It was under British control, although there were negotiations, ongoing negotiations, to have it revert to China, which happened, I guess, in 1997. But they started building factories in China, the Hong Kong people building factories in China. Then you started getting special economic zones opening up on the in Fujian province across from Taiwan, and the Taiwanese businessmen. And one thing you have to remember is the political elite of Taiwan was from the mainland, and they spoke Mandarin, but the political elite weren't the commercial elite, and the commercial elite were native Taiwanese who had done well under Japanese occupation. And the Taiwanese language is not Mandarin. It is actually basically a dialect of the Fujian language, which is on the other, southeastern coastal China. And they started setting up operations, and then special economic zones up more closer to Manchuria or Port Arthur were opened up, and the Koreans were attracted to them. And then you started getting Japanese investment. So you started getting this Asian investment into China in the late 80s and early 90s. And that was a big development. And, over these 30 years, you've just seen the Chinese exports move up and up and up in quality and in the product cycle. So instead of being toys, they started just being, then move from toys to textiles, from textiles to appliances, and just going up and up the ladder. Now you are getting high tech stuff. So it's been amazing. And Filbert, you're correct in pointing out that the China joining the World Trade Organization was that was a watershed. And they've become the factory to the world, or the workshop of the world. Isn't that what the British called themselves 200 years ago?
I'm not sure, but yeah, you're correct.
Yeah.
And they're also the world's biggest polluter.
Biggest polluter? Well, they're the biggest manufacturer, so you expect that. But I haven't been to China recently, but everybody I know who has says that the air is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I would imagine that they have very high levels of carbon monoxide, in the atmosphere that you're breathing.
Well, when I was there 30 years ago, there was a smell when you were in the east of the country, in the more industrial areas, when you're near a city, there was the smell of sulfur, because what electricity they were manufacturing was coal, and their coal had a lot of sulfur. So there was just this sulfury smell. Now, I don't know how many more times, if it's 20 or 50 more times as much electricity they're making now than then. Then I, out in the West wasn't really even electrified to a large extent. Maybe the town centers were, but the villages weren't. The rural areas were not electrified, no electricity, and so everything's changed. So that's massive. And so is there going to be a trade war between the United States and China, like a real escalation, and where there's going to be just major shifts in manufacturing and trade? Or is it just going to be a lot of talk, a certain amount of action, but to the extent there's action, it's going to be gradual enough for it not to create major disruptions?
I think it's mostly talk, and it may not even be, they may not even mean it, it may just be for show. It's hard to say, it really is.
And then the follow-up is a trade war desirable? I mean, Trump said, trade wars are good and easily won.
Just for the record, I don't think it's a trade war, and I don't think we're getting into one.
Mm-hmm. So, but still, the same follow-up. Would it be desirable? Or...
I don't think it would be.
Mm-hmm. So...
Not for either nation. However, an interesting fact to this subject is that China is amassing huge amounts of gold, and Russia too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that plays into, you know, them, how much debt they purchased, you know, throughout the past decade. American debt.
Does this mean that they are reducing their levels of treasury bonds and increasing their gold holdings? Is it a shift from the one asset class to the other?
That, and they're trading lots of stuff in gold rather than dollars. Like, I know they have, the people are using gold. There's gold ATMs in China.
Do they actually dispense gold?
People, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Do they actually dispense gold?
Yeah, they do. There's some in Dubai, too.
Wow. I was asking the question, is it desirable? Because, you know, there are people who are hardliners on trade, and I was asking earlier, could the jobs come back? You know, it takes time for... If factories have been mothballed, they might be. Maybe you could get them going again. If they're operating under capacity, and there's this excess, this unused capacity, that could be restarted. But if you're talking about, you know, having to, like, you've got industries like steel that were decimated in the 1970s, and you know, if you go to the steel belt in Pennsylvania and Ohio, it's not as if. You know, those are rusted out old steel mills to the extent they still exist. So building new mills, you know, is that really going to happen?
So here's a question I have. Does population play a factor in all this? Like, what do we have? 300 million, about 300 million or so?
Yeah, well, it's 300 million, I believe, the last census, and the next census would be probably 330 million. Unless this question about whether you're a census, whether you're a citizen, scares people away from the census, that will be interesting.
Well, the surface area of the nations is about the same.
Right.
China and America, the United States are about the same, but yet they have about 1.4 billion, almost 1.4 billion.
Yeah, so they've got they've got four times as many people.
Yeah, I mean they have. They need jobs. They need jobs. And, you know, it's not our fault that they, you know, they reproduce like that, like weeds. I mean, I don't mean
well, they did. At all. They did. Anything. They have, but they don't anymore.
Yeah, it is leveling off. It really is tapering off. But, I mean, still, it's a massive problem that they're faced with now. Is like, how do you employ that massive amount of people? You can't.
That's right.
And I mean, we could employ not everybody, but, you know, we could reach full employment here, I would think.
Well, we could. I mean, the whole thing is the Chinese elite wants to keep their people employed so that they won't get restless, right? The American elite... wants to keep our people unemployed, and then they can not just unemployed but unemployable, and so that they can have an excuse for bringing in more, third world people into the country. You know, so they flood us with opiates. They are trying to destroy our people, and so having all sorts of goods flood in. Cheap enough to buy on, you know, Social Security disability, which is mass. You know, the amount of people on Social Security disability is just incredible. There's just the Chinese government wants to keep their people unemployed, and our elite have wanted to keep us unemployed and unemployable. And it's sad to say, but don't you think that's the case?
Yeah, I agree.
But Trump, I think Trump's different, and I think he's really throwing a monkey wrench into things, and I think he does want to have jobs, and I think he does want people to go back to work again and you know, regain their health and their employability. But you know, you look around and, you know, when I'm talking about people on disability, there's lots of black people on disability, but there's lots of white people on disability, both of them. I mean, blacks and whites are, in a lot of ways, blacks and whites are facing some very similar problems in terms of, you know, the men in particular being without work, being without hope. You know, whites and blacks are different, but they do share this problem, especially the men. And, you know, the drug dependency, and among whites, the suicide rates, which is, you know, bringing up the death rate. So it's pretty incredible. All right, well, we are going to be back after a break with more of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And we are back. Well, there's two things I want to talk about. One, I just want to mention that Donald Trump is back. And you remember that when he announced for president, he talked about Mexico, Mexicans. They're not sending their best. They're not sending people like you and me. They're bringing crime. They're bringing drugs. They're rapists. And he got in a lot of trouble. And today he was giving a speech on taxes in West Virginia. And he says, quote, "Remember my opening remarks at Trump Tower when I opened? Everybody said, oh, he's so tough. I used the word rape. And yesterday it came out where this journey coming up," he's referring to the caravan of inclusiveness, "women are raped at levels that nobody's ever seen before." So I'm not laughing at people being raped, But I'm just laughing at Trump bringing this up again. And it's almost like a told you so. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Mexicans, that word's a bad word. You can't say Mexicans.
Okay.
All right. That just offends some people.
It does offend people. And then last but not least, Amazon. So Trump's been going after Amazon lately, you know, because Amazon uses the post office, especially, I guess, in areas where FedEx and UPS don't deliver. Trump has, for a while, been talking about Amazon getting too much of a sweetheart deal. It's not paying the post office enough. And that may be the case. I don't know. And more recently, giving them kind of the Walmart treatment. You might remember that a decade or two ago, Walmart was faulted for having decimated Main Street with unfair competition, or with competition, fair or unfair, however you want to see it. I would call it unfair competition, because it would basically dump products in areas until Main Street got put out of business, and then it would raise up prices again. That's basically the essence of dumping. Amazon, a lot of people like buying things on Amazon, and I buy things on Amazon not so much for the price, but because for me, going out and buying things is a chore, and usually things I want, I don't necessarily need to have them right away. I can wait a few days for them to arrive, and so for me, Amazon's a big convenience. I don't know about you, but
yeah, I order lots of musical stuff from Amazon. However, I don't like, up until recently, you started to have to pay tax.
Mm-hmm. Well,
at least I did, my state.
Now, Amazon, I guess next to Apple, is it the number two biggest, or until recently? I mean, its share price was up over $1,500 recently. Now it's come back a little bit. It's down a little bit, but I think it was the second largest company in America, or perhaps the world, in terms of market capitalization. Now, the thing is, there's no reason why a bunch of other companies couldn't do the exact same thing Amazon's doing, and maybe they will. And, you know, we see companies come and go. IBM was a big deal, and then IBM's not a big deal anymore. Then Microsoft was the big deal, and now it's not the big deal. And it was, Google, and we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. And is it good for to have products delivered? Is it better to go out and pick them up at stores? You know, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Philbert?
Well, you can have it delivered to, like, they say if it's delivered from FedEx, you can have it delivered to a FedEx store or a UPS store. You know? So if you're worried about getting it, like, stolen by one of those idiots that is a package thief.
And that's a real thing, too.
Yeah, it is a real thing. I mean, it depends on where you live, of course. I think overall it's kind of... there's a low chance of that happening, but yeah, it is a thing. You need to be aware of that. But yeah, if you're worried about that, you can have it delivered at a package store. You know, that's always convenient.
I know that we are out of time, and so thank you for joining me, Philbert.
Awesome. Thanks.
And we will be back again next week with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio Financial Friday.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.